Imagine tracking down this incredibly rare, like 30-year-old console on eBay,
Oh,
right?
yeah, paying a massive premium for it, I'm sure.
Exactly, paying a fortune. And then you
Oh.
plug it into your wall and you're just praying it doesn't spark and catch fire all just so you can play one piece of gaming history.
It is a terrifying experience,
It
honestly.
really is. But if you've been following the explosive shifts in interactive entertainment lately, you know that keeping the medium's history alive while simultaneously pushing its tech boundaries is just this constant battle.
Right, it's a huge tug of war.
So, welcome to today's deep dive. We're looking at a landscape that is fundamentally rewriting its own rules right now.
Which is fascinating to watch unfold.
Totally. And our primary roadmap for this today is the April 2026 16th edition of iGaming Magazine by LODJ Media.
A really packed issue, by the way.
Oh, absolutely packed. So our mission today is to map out exactly how the gaming industry is currently just obliterating its traditional boundaries. We're going to explore how developers are rescuing retro history from digital extinction, bridging the gap between fiercely rival hardware platforms, restructuring internal mechanics, and even mounting a full-blown assault on Hollywood.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that the news drops in this edition of iGaming, they represent a massive paradigm shift in how we consume, preserve, and interact with digital media.
Not just a couple of random PR announcements.
Exactly. We aren't just looking at isolated product announcements here. We are watching the foundational walls of the industry come down across the board, and that starts with the very architecture that games are built on.
Right, which is the perfect place to start, because before we look at the bleeding edge of next-gen graphics and Hollywood crossovers, we really have to understand how the industry is saving its
Which
foundations.
is a huge task.
It is. So the magazine highlights a major move by Atari. They've just acquired an emulation studio called Implicit
A
Conversions.
very smart move on their part.
Yeah, because Implicit Conversions has built this proprietary emulation engine that flawlessly runs games from the 70s, 80s, and 90s on modern hardware. Specifically, the PS5, the Xbox Series X, and the Switch.
Unbelievable tech.
Right, so Atari is bringing this tech in-house to double down on highly accurate, feature-rich ports of their legacy titles.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. It's kind of like finding a master mechanic who can take a classic 1970s muscle car and seamlessly make it run on a modern electric grid without losing its original soul.
Oh, that's a great way to put it. That analogy really highlights the sheer mechanical difficulty of what Implicit Conversions is doing.
Yeah.
Because video game preservation is, well, it's uniquely difficult.
Is it's tied to the hardware, right?
Exactly. Games are inherently tied to the highly idiosyncratic hardware they were originally built for. We are talking about instruction set architectures here.
Right.
A 1980s arcade board or a 90s console processes math and renders graphics in a fundamentally different way than, say, the multi-core processors inside a PlayStation 5.
Yeah. So they don't even speak the same language.
No, not at all. The original code is essentially speaking a dead language.
Yeah.
So to make a 1980s game run natively on a PS5, you need a translation layer, an emulator, that can interpret those obsolete instructions in real time.
Wow, real-time translation.
Right, but it has to do it without introducing input lag or visual glitches.
Which means the emulator has to simulate the old hardware's processor, its audio chip, its memory quirks, sometimes even like the specific refresh rate of an old cathode ray tube television, all simultaneously.
And it has to do all of that with cycle accuracy.
Cycle accuracy.
Yes. So by acquiring Implicit Conversions, Atari is basically absorbing the ultimate translation engine for their entire catalog.
That's massive for preservation.
It is. They are ensuring that the foundational texts of video game history remain accessible and playable without requiring the user to rely on clunky workarounds, fan-made patches, or, decaying physical hardware.
Right, no more sparking consoles from eBay.
Exactly. They're taking ownership of their own digital preservation at a structural level.
Well, so moving from literal code preservation to a spiritual revival, the magazine details Nintendo's strategy for the return of Star Fox.
Seriously.
I know. They are targeting a 2027 release, and the franchise has been largely dormant since the mixed reception of Star Fox Zero.
Right, which was a rough one.
Yeah, it was. But Nintendo is reportedly utilizing a dual release strategy here. First, they're dropping a smaller, character-focused spin-off to reintroduce Fox, Falco, Peppy, and Slippy.
Okay.
And then that will be followed by a massive mainline entry built for next-gen hardware, featuring intense space dogfights, deep ship customization, and robust online multiplayer.
That is a huge leap.
But why the dual release? I mean, instead of putting all their resources into one massive next-gen basket, they're splitting their focus. It seems like they're essentially using the spin-off to test if modern gamers still care about the Lylat system before committing to the big launch.
Well, testing the waters is definitely a factor, but this dual release strategy is mainly driven by the stark financial realities of modern AAA game development.
The budget's right.
Oh, the budgets are astronomical. Creating a massive, mechanically complex next-generation title with ship customization and robust netcode for online multiplayer, that takes anywhere from 5 to 6 years.
Wow.
And the budgets regularly push past the $200 million mark.
200 million.
Yeah, Nintendo simply cannot afford a financial failure of that magnitude on a dormant franchise. So the character-focused spin-off acts as a required financial risk mitigation tool.
I see. It mitigates the risk by basically building emotional investment up front.
Precisely.
Because if you drop players straight into a complex $200 million multiplayer space simulator with characters they haven't seen in a decade, the learning curve and the lore disconnect might just push them away.
Exactly right. This spin-off serves to reforge that emotional connection with the mercenary crew. It reminds the audience why they even care about Fox and Falco in the first place.
That makes a lot of sense.
And this strategy also optimizes their development pipeline.
How so?
Well, a smaller narrative game allows the writers and character artists to iterate on the lore, while the primary engineering team spends their time exclusively solving the intense technical hurdles.
Oh, like the zero gravity physics.
Exactly. Zero gravity physics, massive particle effects, online matchmaking for the mainline entry. They are essentially isolating their creative and technical risks.
That is brilliant. Financial risk mitigation is definitely one way to ensure a game's survival in this landscape, but another way is to maximize your addressable market by breaking down hardware
Oh,
borders.
absolutely. This is a huge trend.
Let's look at how hardware is finally catching up to the ambitions of massive live service games. iGaming confirms that Final Fantasy XIV is officially coming to the Nintendo Switch 2.
Which is a huge deal.
It's massive because previously the sheer technical demands kept this MMORPG entirely off Nintendo platforms.
And rightly so. The back-end calculations required for an MMO are staggering.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You have dozens of players in a single area, all triggering unique animations, generating massive particle effects, and the server has to synchronize every single coordinate and damage number in real time.
And the old hardware just couldn't keep up.
No, older handheld hardware simply couldn't process that data pipeline fast enough to maintain a playable frame rate.
But the Switch 2's power bump fundamentally alters that equation.
Yes, it changes everything.
Players can now run uncompromised 24-man raids docked on their TV, and then they can seamlessly undock the console and keep playing on their commute.
Which is just wild to think about.
Furthermore, this release includes full cross-play and cross-progression with PC, PlayStation, and Xbox, complete with a tailored user interface.
Yeah.
Just imagine the practical application for you here. You're deep in a raid, you realize you have to leave for work, and you just pop the console off the dock, tether to your phone's Wi-Fi, and keep healing your party on the train.
It's incredible. And it shows that director Naoki Yoshida, Yoshi P and Square Enix, are systematically dismantling the last walled gardens of the gaming industry.
Right, because historically, companies like Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo wanted to keep their ecosystems completely closed off.
Exactly. They wanted to force consumers to buy their specific hardware to play with friends. But a massive multiplayer game requires population density to survive.
That makes sense.
If a new player logs in and the starting zones are empty, the game dies.
Period. So by implementing full cross-play across all major consoles, they basically solve the population problem.
Yes, entirely.
It doesn't matter what piece of plastic sits under your television or if you are holding it in your hands on a bus.
Right. They are unifying a famously welcoming community into a single massive player pool. When you remove every hardware barrier to entry, you guarantee your game dominates the MMO landscape.
Because the friction of joining your friends has been reduced to zero.
Exactly. You just buy the game on whatever device you own and instantly connect.
So, unifying the player base across all consoles absolutely solves the population problem. But once you have those millions of players locked in the same virtual room, how do you keep them from getting bored?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. That is the crisis that competitive modern titans are trying to solve. They keep players hooked by completely tearing down and rebuilding their core mechanics.
Which is very risky, but necessary.
It is. The magazine dives into two massive updates, EA Sports UFC 6 and Call of Duty Black Ops 7.
Two absolute heavyweights.
Yeah, let's start with UFC 6. It releases June 19th, 2026, with Alex Poetan Pereira as the rumored cover star.
Great choice for the cover.
Oh, yeah. EA is pushing the Frostbite engine to deliver 60 frames per second and bone-crushing 3D realism. But the crucial shift here is the overhauled physics-based grappling system.
This is a massive change.
They are actively abandoning button mashing and instead rewarding timing, positional awareness, and leverage. But weight physics-based grappling sounds great for an esports pro, but doesn't that completely ruin the Friday night couch gaming experience?
It's a fair concern.
Like, if I can't just pick up a controller and throw a spinning back fist, EA risks alienating a massive chunk of their casual player base who just want an arcade fighting experience.
Well, alienating the casual audience is always a constant threat when introducing highly technical systems. However, the developers are looking at the long-term life cycle of the game.
Okay, how so?
If a fighting game relies solely on canned animations and sequence memorization, you know, where pressing X always results in the exact same punch animation, the gameplay loop eventually becomes stagnant and predictable.
Oh, right. It just gets boring.
Exactly. But a physics-based grappling system introduces inverse kinematics.
Meaning the game is calculating the actual physical properties of the fighters in real time.
Yes. The physics engine is constantly measuring weight distribution, momentum, and the angle of leverage between two colliding character models.
Wow, so it's never the same twice.
Because of this, no two takedowns will ever look or feel exactly the same. It creates emergent gameplay.
That's fascinating.
While it raises the barrier to entry for the casual player, it creates a skill ceiling that is infinitely high. The hardcore audience will spend years mastering those subtle physics interactions, which gives the game a much longer, healthier lifespan than a simple button masher.
Right. It forces the player to learn a new language of engagement, and we see a very similar mechanical disruption happening in the Call of Duty ecosystem, right?
Absolutely. Same philosophy, different application.
So the magazine details a massive mid-season shakeup for Black Ops 7 and Warzone Season 3 Reloaded. For Warzone, they are dropping two new points of interest into previously dead zones on the map.
To get players moving.
Yeah, but the true disruption is in the weapon balancing. They are issuing a severe mobility nerf to submachine guns while significantly buffing tactical rifles to encourage mid-range fights.
That's a huge shift in the meta.
It is. Simultaneously, Black Ops 7 multiplayer is receiving a remaster classic map alongside an entirely new 6v6 objective mode that demands tight squad-based coordination rather than solo running and gunning.
Yeah, and these balance changes are not arbitrary. They are psychological tools used to break player habits.
Psychological tools.
Yeah. In a battle royale like Warzone, if the submachine gun class allows players to sprint, slide, and jump out of danger instantly, it dictates a highly aggressive close quarters playstyle.
Right, everyone just rushes.
Exactly. Everyone gravitates to that dominant strategy, and the game becomes visually and tactically monotonous.
So it's like putting speed bumps on a popular highway to force traffic into different neighborhoods.
That is exactly what it is.
By slowing down the SMGs and increasing the lethality of tactical rifles, they are artificially manipulating how players flow through the geometry of the map. You can't just blindly sprint into a room anymore. You have to utilize cover and maintain distance.
The developers are functioning as urban planners for their digital spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that same philosophy applied to the new 6v6 objective mode in Black Ops 7.
Right, with the classic map.
Yeah, by introducing a mode that requires tight coordination on a remastered classic map, they're challenging the community's established muscle memory.
Because players might know the layout of the classic map perfectly, but the new objective rules and the altered weapon meta force them to navigate that familiar space in an entirely new way.
Exactly. It is a calculated disruption. When the meta gets stale, the player base leaves. Forcing players to constantly adapt their strategy is how you sustain a live service audience over multiple years.
That makes total sense. So we've mapped out how games are dictating physical layouts, manipulating internal economies, and tearing down hardware walls.
It's been a busy month for the industry.
Seriously. But the final piece of the puzzle we are looking at today shows gaming conquering an entirely different medium.
Ah, yes. Hollywood.
The magazine confirms that EA's Battlefield franchise is receiving a massive feature film adaptation starring Michael B. Jordan.
Which is just phenomenal news.
It is, and the consensus is that the video game movie curse is officially dead, largely thanks to the critical and commercial successes of adaptations like The Last of Us and Fallout.
They really paved the way.
They really did. Now, Battlefield is notorious for intense squad gameplay, massive vehicular combat, and the levolution mechanic, where the Frostbite engine allows entire skyscrapers to collapse mid-match and alter the map.
Total chaos.
Yeah. And the casting here is fascinating. Michael B. Jordan's intense physicality from roles in Creed and Black Panther makes him a highly credible fit for a gritty, battle-hardened squad leader navigating a collapsing environment.
Oh, the casting is incredibly strong. But the actual production faces a profound creative challenge that previous successful adaptations did not have to navigate.
Really? Like what?
Well, games like The Last of Us function beautifully as television because they are already structured as linear, highly scripted narratives.
Oh, right.
The game tells the player exactly where to go and what emotion to feel.
Hmm.
Battlefield operates on the exact opposite principle. It is a massive, player-driven sandbox.
Right, because the narrative isn't written by a developer. It's written by 64 players, causing absolute chaos in real time.
Exactly. The joy of Battlefield is emergent unpredictability.
Like the crazy stunt videos online.
Yes. The defining moments of that franchise are things like a player strapping C4 explosives to a Jeep, launching it off a cliff, and detonating it midair to destroy an enemy helicopter.
Right, or two players engaging in an unscripted 10-minute sniper duel across a crumbling cityscape.
Exactly. So the central challenge for the filmmakers is capturing the illusion of interactive, chaotic player agency and translating it into a passive, structured Hollywood script.
Because if they just film a generic military action movie and slap the Battlefield logo on the poster, the gaming audience will reject it instantly.
They will tear it apart.
Yeah. The film has to visually and tonally replicate the feeling of a dynamically collapsing map while still obeying the structural rules of cinema. Translating emergent gameplay into a linear script is arguably the final frontier the entertainment industry is trying to cross.
It requires a really delicate balance of maintaining the spectacle of levolution while grounding it in a character narrative that an audience can passively invest in for 2 hours.
It really puts the entire scope of the industry into perspective. Look at the ground we've covered through these sources today.
It's a lot to take in.
It is.
Yeah.
We started with Atari pulling off cycle-accurate emulation to preserve the literal code of the past.
Yep.
We examined Nintendo's $200 million risk mitigation strategy, managing player nostalgia to safely revive Star Fox.
Right.
We saw Final Fantasy XIV solve the population crisis by shattering hardware barriers and unifying a global community across Switch, PC, and consoles.
A huge milestone.
And then we analyzed the calculated disruptions of UFC 6 and Call of Duty, basically acting as digital urban planners to break stagnant player habits.
The meta shakeups.
Exactly. Nice. And finally, Battlefield proving that these properties are no longer content to just be games. They are actively reshaping Hollywood blockbusters.
It's an unstoppable force.
It really is. If you take anything away from this deep dive, it's that gaming is no longer a niche hobby isolated to a plastic box under your TV. It is the driving engine of global pop culture, and it is aggressively obliterating every boundary in its path.
You know, to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Yeah.
As we watch video games adapt into structured Hollywood epics and simultaneously watch next-generation game engines deliver photorealistic cinematic experiences at 60 frames per second.
Right.
Are we approaching a future where the line between playing a game and watching a movie disappears entirely? When the visual fidelity and narrative structure of both mediums become identical, what happens when you can no longer tell the difference?
Wow. That is a wild, slightly dizzying thought to end on. But looking at the mechanics and strategies we've unpacked today, it feels like we're already standing on the edge of that reality.
We really are.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. I hope this exploration gives you a much clearer map of the underlying logic driving this incredible industry forward. Keep exploring these sources, keep questioning the mechanics behind your favorite media, and we will catch you on the next one.